This lecture is for Unit 1, Basic Computing Concepts, including History. It's the first unit in Component 4, Introduction to Information and Computer Science. Up until the 1970s, computers were large, and they were large computers, mainframes, and they were used by government, large industries, and universities. But now, we have the reduced size and cost of microprocessors, which led to computers from personal use. So people who had been programming and using computers at work and using these large machines and mainframes could now own their own computers at home and do their own programs at home. The first available personal computer was the Altair 8800. It was available in 1975 as a kit or fully assembled. It was programmed with switches, and output was given with flashing lights, so not exactly the personal computer we're used to today. It was very popular with hobbyists, so those people that were already interested in computers, whether it was because of their job or because, you know, they had read up on them on their own, they were the ones that were very interested in sort of building these own little computers that could be used at home. And Bill Gates and Paul Allen started Microsoft, actually, with a compiler. They developed the compiler for an Altair. Also at the same time, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak started Apple Computer Company in 1976. The Apple I was their first offering, and that was in 1976, and it was a kit. The user had to provide a keyboard, power supply, and monitor. And you can see here there's a picture of the Apple I computer. It's not very sophisticated looking. The Apple I sold for $666.66. They thought this was an interesting number. And included an etched printed circuit board, a bag of parts, and a 16-page assembly manual. The user had to provide his or her own keyboard, power supply, and monitor, which was usually a modified television set. When a Mountain View computer store called the Byte Shop ordered 50 units, Wozniak and Jobs attracted the funding to start Apple Computer. Apple I was not the first PC, but it certainly was one of the most popular. It was followed by the Apple II in 1977, which came out with a keyboard, monitor, and floppy drive. And you can see a picture of it here, and it looks much more like the personal computers we know today. At the time that the Apple computers were becoming popular, IBM was watching very carefully, and it decided it wanted to get into this market as well. Now, it knew in order to be competitive, it had to do it quickly, so it didn't have time to develop its own chips and hardware and software. So instead, it based it on parts that were already available. It was based, the first one was based on the Intel 8088 chip, and it used off-the-shelf parts and software, including compilers and operating system for Microsoft, which, and because of this, actually launched the success of Microsoft. Because its architecture wasn't proprietary, it led to the development of what were called clones at the time. So anything that was based on the design that IBM came up with was known at the time as an IBM clone if it wasn't actually created by IBM itself. It was used for business and personal use. So a lot of these machines showed up in different offices. A lot of people bought them for their homes. And it really started the personal computer becoming popular. Now, they didn't just have to have hardware for these initial personal computers. They also needed software. And the operating system is the most important piece of software that runs on a computer. And it's necessary for coordinating with the hardware. DOS was developed for Apple, and it was actually developed by Steve Wozniak for coordinating the Motorola chip that they used on the Apple products. IBM needed an OS for their PC based on the Intel chip. It approached Microsoft, who didn't actually have an OS at the time. They did have compilers available for it, but not an OS. Bill Gates recommended talking with Digital Research, who did have one, but they didn't return IBM's call. In the meantime, Microsoft acquired QDOS from Seattle Computer Products, which Microsoft distributed to IBM along with their compilers, and it called it MS-DOS. The rest, of course, is history, and it really was some very smart, quick maneuvering by Bill Gates and Paul Allen that really helped launch the success of Microsoft with the initial IBM PC. Now, the first popular software program is arguably what's called VisiCalc. It was developed by Harvard's business school students Dan Bricklin and Bob Frankston in 1978. And what it was a spreadsheet program for the PC. And as you can imagine, a lot of different businesses were very interested in this since they needed to do these types of calculation. 100,000 plus copies were sold of it the first year. Also, other spreadsheet programs soon followed. Lotus 1-2-3 in 1982 and Excel in 1985. Word processing, which had been done on separate dedicated machines, made a huge impact on the PC world. WordStar was first in 1979, followed by Word from MS-DOS and WordPerfect. Word processing is now one of the biggest applications for PCs today. In the meantime, the beginnings of the Internet were starting. In 1969, what was called ARPANET at the time, connected four universities. It was a project sponsored by the U.S. government for connecting researchers, and it was motivated by the Cold War. By 1971, there were 15 sites on the network, and by the 1980s, there were over 1,000 sites on the network, and that's when the term Internet actually started being used instead of ARPANET to refer to the network. Other networks were formed at the same time, and eventually all merged together to become what we know today as the Internet. In 1989, Tim Berners-Lee developed the World Wide Web software, which is basically a way to interface with the Internet. In 1992, Congress voted to allow commercial activity on the Internet. So now you didn't have to be a government-sponsored institution or university to actually be on the Internet. You could be any type of corporation or personal person who could actually get on the Internet. In 1993, the first web browsers were released, and in 1997, PubMed, which was free online access to Medline, was launched. So you can see that all of these different things were happening at the same time. We were having personal computers that were developed, and they were becoming faster, cheaper, and smaller as technology advanced, which means that more households and more people could afford to purchase them. Microsoft advanced their operating system and introduced Windows, which now made it very easy for users to interact with the computer because now they could use a mouse and point and click. The Internet was open to commercial use, and web browsers made exploring the websites easy. And this all led to this huge Internet boom, but it also led to the ubiquitousness of computers in our society today. And as all these advances in computing and the Internet were happening, electronic medical records, or EMRs, got their foothold. More versions of them were being developed in the 1990s, and they became more user-friendly with the addition of graphical user interfaces. HIPAA, which is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, included provisions for establishing standards for electronic medical records, and this was passed in 1996. In 2000, only 16% of private physicians and less than 10% of hospitals used EMRs. By 2005, 25% of private physicians used EMRs, and the number is just increasing. Now, there have been many more advances even since then, and more advances happen every single day. Some of the highlights, though, are that personal data assistants introduced handheld computing, and smartphones replaced PDAs. All of us now are very familiar with iPhones and BlackBerries, which are basically little computers that we carry around with us because they can do almost all the things we can do on our computer, although with a limited screen and limited memory. Wireless networks are now widely available, so mobile computing is pervasive. We now expect to be able to connect to the Internet everywhere, and we expect to be able to connect all the time. Social networking is another phenomenon that has come through the use of the Internet and computers, which now connect people frequently all over the globe. Computers and the Internet are ubiquitous, and now, in 2009, the High Tech Act was passed as part of the Economic Stimulus Recovery Plan, and it provides incentives for EMR use starting next year in 2011. And because of this act, we will see much, much more use of electronic medical records and health records in clinical settings in our society. So where is this all heading? What's the future of computing? Well, if you could tell that, if you had your own crystal ball, then you'd probably become a very wealthy person, because we don't know exactly where things are going, but we do know some things. We know that computer technology is going to continue to become faster, more powerful, and smaller, and presumably cheaper. We know that mobile computing is here to stay, and the idea of cloud computing, which is basically all the data that exists about a particular thing out there on the internet, are going to be hot topics for a while. Are computers going to become more ubiquitous, even more than they are? How are they going to do that? Are there going to be more embedded computers? What's in store for healthcare technology? It's difficult to say for sure, but we do know that it will be interesting, so we'll all have to stay tuned.